Hello everybody, this week's Parsha is Parsha Tazria Metzera. And the Medrash Tanchuma, in the beginning of this week's Parsha, discusses what is the connection between our Parsha, which opens with the halachas of childbirth, the fact that the mother becomes tamei after giving birth, for a boy she has 7 days of tumah, for a girl it's 14 days, and the halachas of the end of the previous Parsha, Parsha Shmini, which dealt with the halachas of kashrus, which foods we could eat, which foods you can't eat. What's the connection between the two topics? And the Medrash Tanchuma says as follows. The Medrash says that when a child is conceived, a child is created in his mother's womb, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitzava his, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands him and tells him, Mizeh teichal u'mizeh lo teichal, from this you shall eat, from this you shall not eat, Zeh lechem tamei, this is tamei for you, this you could, this you can't. Hashem gives every fetus a full-blown shear in kashrus. Says a medrash, Umishahu mekabal Allah b'me'imai kol ha-mitzah shebetera, and any child who accepts upon himself all the mitzah shebetera, afterwards he's born. That's why the Torah puts the two parshas together. Because before a child is born, the first thing he has to commit to is the halachas of kashrus. And that's why the halachas of kashrus are given right before the halachas of childbirth. But what's interesting in the Medrash is the Medrash switches, seemingly. The Medrash begins by saying how Hashem gives him the halachas of kashrus. And then it says if he accepts upon himself kol ha-mitzvah shebeterah, all the mitzvahs that are in the Torah. So which one is it? Is he accepting upon himself the halachas of kashrus, or is he accepting upon himself all the mitzvahs? So I heard a beautiful explanation by Rav Shalom Rosner, said over the name of Avraham Shor in the Sefer Halakach Valibov. He says as follows. He says that we really, if you think into it deeply, one of the most fundamental drives, one of the most foundational drives a person has inside himself, one of the strongest kayach of taiva, of desire in a person, is the taivas ha'achila, the desire for food. Like we find really the first sin, the first commandment that was given to Adam HaRishon and Chava was about what to eat and what not to eat. You can eat from every other tree in the Gan Eden except for the Eitz Hadas. And ultimately that's where they failed. Their taiva overpowered them, the taiva sachila, the taiva of food. And Reb Tzadik explains many, many times that ultimately if a person wants to work on controlling his taiva, on controlling his ability to fight his lusts and his desires, the place to start is when a person controls his eating habits. And the more a person controls himself in the area of food, the more everything else falls into place. That, says the Rav Ram Shor, is what the Medrash is telling us. The first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells a child before he's born is the halachas of kashrus. There's going to be things out there that are good for you if you eat them, and there's things that you're going to have to control yourself because they're bad for you, they're toxic. And if a person accepts upon himself that I am going to take control of my desires and I'm not going to let myself just eat whatever I want and then kind of get myself into all kinds of trouble, I'm going to control myself and be smart about it, then he's basically accepting upon himself all the mitzvahs of Torah. Because then he's realizing, he's saying that I am willing to control just because I want something, just because something looks good and tastes good and smells good, it doesn't mean I'm going to go for it because I know that intellectually, I know that's not good for me in the long run. When a person commits to that, everything else in Torah falls into place. That's what Torah is all about. Trading off the short-term benefits for the long-term goal. And that's why the Medrash is saying that once he accepts upon himself the laws of kashrus, everything else goes into place. That's already a Kabbalah for all the mitzvahs of a Torah. Later in Pasuk Vav, the Torah says when the mother becomes pure, when she, the time passes that she can already purify herself, for a son or for a daughter. The Torah tells us she has to bring certain karbanos, etc. But the Sefer Oil Torah asks, that's strange, why did the Torah begin the parasha? It called the child a zachar or nekeva, a male or a female. And now in Pasuk Vav it switches to the language of lebein or lebas, to a son or to a daughter. Why the switch? And he explains as follows. He says that the difference between a zachar and a nekeva and a ben and a bas is a zachar is just a male. A nekeva is a female. They are a standalone entity, male or female. A bain, a son or a bas or a daughter, represents a relationship. You're the child of somebody. There's a connection to somebody else. The whole switch that has to happen over here is that there's a male or a female born. But then there has to begin a process of chinuch, of raising this child and turning them into a ben or a bas, a son or a daughter, giving them over a mesorah, a tradition, a heritage. There's a whole process of creating a chinuch of a mesorah of Klal Yisrael, making a ben and a bas. How does that happen? What's the best way to do that? How do you guarantee that your child will take on what you're giving them? It's b'malais yemei tahara. The more the parent can purify themselves, the more the parent can bring themselves up out of their own physical drives and lusts, the more the parent can become a role model, the more there could be a continuation of ben and bas. Somebody asked once to Chaz Nish, when does the obligation of chinuch start? At what age of the child does the chinuch obligation start? Chaz Nish told him, you know, it starts 20 years before you get married. Meaning that the more you work on yourself, the more you can be mechanech your children. And that's what Torah is telling us. If you want to have a ben and a bas, a son and a daughter to follow in your ways, it has to come through milois yemei tahara, the more you purify yourself. In Pasuk Ches, the Torah tells us that she has to bring a oila and a chatas. A carbon oila, which is a complete oila offering, gets burnt completely, and a chatas is for a sin offering. And Rashi points out that even though the Pasuk lists the carbon oila before the carbon chatas, actually, in halacha, you first bring the karma chatas and then you sacrifice the oila. And the question is, if that's not the proper order, then why would the Torah write it as oila first, then chatas, if actually the chatas comes first? So, in the Sefer Oil Torah, he brings from Michtav Melio, from Melio Dessler, he says as follows. He says that, really in life, there's two parts in life. There's a person's big vision, where does he want to get to? And then there's a person's practical day-by-day steps he takes to get there. Everybody understands that a carbon oila is completely burnt up to Hashem. Nothing goes to anybody here in this world. It's all completely set to Hashem. That's the highest level. That's the most, so to speak, the most holy carbon. But a carbon chatas is meant for a sin offering. It's some of it goes to the kahanim. It's a lot more, so to speak, physical. It's a lot more related to this world. It atones for sin. And a person has to recognize that there's two parts, says the Michtav Melio. Practically speaking, the chatas has to come first. Because everybody has faults and everyone has to work on themselves step by step. That's why practically you bring the carbon chatas first. But the Torah mentions the carbon oila first, because when a person starts out by bringing his chatas, he has to know where is he heading. What is the goal at the end of the day? And he has to have that picture of that oila, of what he wants to look like, that pure vision of himself at the end of the day, where he wants to get to first, and then he could bring the carbon chatas. There's a story that's told over, that Chaim Shmulevitz, the yeshiva of Mir Yeshiva, when he was a bacher, he was learning in the yeshiva in Grodno, and at a certain point, he needed to take a break. He pushed himself to he needed to take a vacation. So he went, for vacation, he went to visit a different yeshiva, the yeshiva of his uncle, Rabbi Yaffe, and the yeshiva of Nevardik, which I think was in that point in Bialystok. So he comes there to the yeshiva, he spends a couple of days there, and when he's there, he asks his uncle, so you show me who is the best bacher in this yeshiva. So his uncle tells him, he's like, look, see that guy walking by? He is the biggest lamdan. It means he is the guy who has the deepest analytical skills in the Gemara. He says, that guy, he's the biggest bucky. He knows the most information. He knows all the most Gemaras by heart. That guy, he's the guy with the biggest midas. And he goes on, he points out different guys throughout the yeshiva, each one having their own unique, amazing skill. So Chaim Shmulevitz listens and says, wow, it's amazing, but look, ultimately, who is the best guy? Who's your top guy in the yeshiva? So Rabbi Yaffe says, you want to see? And he goes, he takes him to a corner somewhere, shows him a guy, a different guy, bend over a Gemara over there, says, this is the best guy in the yeshiva. So he says, he's not any of the guys who showed him before. He's not the Bucky, he's not the Lamdan, he's not the guy with the best midas. Why are you showing me this guy? Why aren't you, he doesn't have any of the other top qualities. So Rabbi Yaffe told him, he's like, no, you have to realize, he has a very unique midah. His midah is, he's the greatest mavakish. He's the one who wants it the most. And that ultimately is going to make the biggest difference. Because the more you want to be good, the more you have that push and that ambition, to try to be something, that's ultimately going to define how far you get in life. And sure enough, says Rechayim Shlavitz, that bachar, the one who had the biggest bikush, the biggest desire for growth, that was the stipler, Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky, who ended up becoming one of the greatest Gedolei Hadar of the past generation. Part of the process of the purification of the Metzora is that he has to be sprayed upon with holy water with three things. He needs an azayv, a branch of cedar, an eitz eres, a branch of cedar, an azayv, a hyssop, a long grass, and a shnitai las, and a red string to tie around the two of them. Now, what's interesting is you find the exact same three, so to speak, items used in the process of Parah Aduma when we spray the ash of Parah Aduma, the ash and water mixed together on the Parah Aduma to purify somebody. We also use the Eitz Erez, the Ezev, and the Shnitei Las. But what's interesting is when the Torah over there lists the three of them, the Torah first lists the cedar, then it lists the hyssop, and then it lists the red string. Yet when it comes to the Metzora, the Torah changes the order. The Torah first says Eitz Erez, Ushnitei Las, it says the cedar, the red string, and only then it goes back and says the hyssop. What's the difference? So I saw in the Sefer Meshulchan Gavaya, they asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky this question. Reb Chaim Kanievsky explained it as follows. He says, really, the logical way to list it is the way it says at Parah Aduma. You go from large to small. The cedar branch, the hyssop, and then ultimately the red string. Why by Parshas Metzora did the Torah specifically change it? Because the Rambam tells us in Hilchas Deis that a person, if he wants to change himself, if a person has a negative character trait which he wants to uproot, it's not enough to simply go and be normal and go in the Derech HaMutzah, in the regular way. If a person has a bad character trait, he has to go to the opposite extreme to uproot it. After he goes to the opposite extreme for a while, then he can go back into the middle and be mainstream. The Torah is telling me that a Metzora, who spoke Lashon Hara, it comes, as the Midrashim tell us, as the Medrash says, it comes from gaiva. For a person to go and point out everybody else's faults and speak bad about everybody else, it comes from a feeling that I'm perfect, so therefore I have plenty to find dirt in everybody else. In order to purify himself from that, he has to work on his anivus. So he can't go to that middle level of the ezev, of the hyssop. He has to go all the way down to the shnitei las, that red string, that lowly red string, and only then can he snap back into the middle, eventually, and become part of the Ezev, that middle grass, that's anivus, but with balance. And that is the way a person works in any midah. If a person wants to uproot a bad character trait, says the Rambam, you got to go all the way out on the opposite, and then eventually hope to get back into the middle, and to be zeichet to go in the proper balanced way. The parsha continues and tells us about the phenomenon of nigei batim, these, so to speak, these signs of the houses. There will be a concept of tzaras on the houses. The Ramban says it's a special miracle that there's people only merited when they're on the high level of Kedusha living in Eretz Yisrael. It's definitely not a natural phenomenon. Now, Rashi on the spot says that technically it was a positive thing. It was a besura taiva. The pasuk says, Hashem says, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, it's going to happen. You're going to have these signs in the houses. Says Rashi, why is it a positive thing? Because before, when the Amorim and the people who lived in the land of Canaan before the Jews invaded, the Amorim knew that Jews were coming, and they hid their gold and silver, kind of knowing the war was going to happen, they hid their gold and silver in the walls of their houses. And the Jews wouldn't even know that they were there. So Hashem made a miracle that there would become tzaras on the walls of the house. The walls of the house would have to be broken, and they would find the gold and silver. So that's why it's considered a positive besura. Now, Tosfos in the Sefer Moshe's Kingdom asks the obvious question. He says, the Gemara tells us in Erechin, at Zayin and Aleph, that the reason why a person gets tzaras on his house is in, so to speak, as a kapara, as an atonement for the sin of being stingy. A person is miserly. He doesn't use his house to host guests. He doesn't use his house to give food and sustenance to others. He gets punished that he gets tzaras on his home. So how could it be that we're saying it's a positive thing that a person gets tzaras on his house if it's coming for a sin? It's coming for being miserly. And the Aruch HaShulchan asks further. He says, how could it be that Hashem really wants to just give us gold and silver? He couldn't think of a more simple way. He couldn't think of a less collateral damage type of way of doing it. He had to give tzaras on the house. Everything in the house has to become tame. Everyone has to move out of the house for a week and a half, break the house, rebuild the house. It seems very, very, very not smooth. How come HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't do it in the easier way? And the truth is, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, and I saw the same teretz in Sefer Oitz HaTorah, is that you're right. Both questions kind of answer each other. If a person was a true tzaddik, a complete tzaddik, and he had no averus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would make it that he would find the money in a clean, easy, painless way. It's only for a person who suffers from the sin of being miserly that there has to be a tzaras on the walls of a house, and he has to go through the process of breaking the house and all the encumbrances of Tumas Negayim on a house. But the Torah is teaching us a very important lesson, that when a person gets reprimanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a person Yisurim to punish him for doing something he did wrong, it's not out of hate, it's not out of spite. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us through and through, and when he punishes us, there's always that sugarcoating, there's always that prize at the end, that if we fix ourselves up, if we pick ourselves up and we change, there's going to be a good side at the end of the Einish. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us. The Besura Taiva is that even when you mess up, even when you do averus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you a chance to fix yourself up, to go through the process of getting yourself better, and then the rewards are going to be so great, they'll outdo any of the suffering that you had to endure in the punishment itself. And that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, and that's how he loves us. And no matter how he punishes us, if we listen to him and we do what's right, we'll always gain at the end.
We should all have a wonderful Shabbos.